Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court, I'm Peter Millett, counsel to Chesapeake Hospital Authority. And with me today is Steve Emmert. We are here to discuss the authority's appeal against the state health commissioner. I'd like to reserve up to 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
Chesapeake Hospital Authority is created under state law to provide for the medical needs of what is now the second largest city in the Commonwealth. As the city's amicus brief in this matter notes, the authority's service area includes the city of Chesapeake and northeastern North Carolina. Mr. Emmert and I are here today as advocates for the authority and also for the consistent interpretation of Virginia administrative law. This decision before you affects care within the city. We seek reversal of the decision and remand of a Court of Appeals decision to the State Health Commissioner. That decision denied the authority's appeal and application to establish open heart surgery services. The appeal ultimately relies on two errors that the Commissioner of Health made in applying the open heart need standard in the state medical facilities plan. There is one acknowledged error and one in which the courts deferred to the Commissioner's flawed and inconsistent interpretation.
May I ask you this? Did harmless error exist under English common law?
Your Honor, I do not know. It appears to be a creation of statute in Virginia.
I think you're right. I think it did not exist in English common law, and that it only exists in Virginia as a matter of 8.01678. So, as I understand your argument, 8.01678 is limited to the relationship between trial courts and appellate courts in the judiciary and has no application to the APA. If the first thesis or hypothesis is right, that the statute is a technical derogation of common law and adding something that didn't exist, it should be narrowly construed, should it not?
Yes, Your Honor, we believe so. And we believe that the more specific statute in this case is 2.2-4029, which once an error of law has been identified, and we've met that burden in this case, that remand is required. The statute says shall remand to the agency.
In the presence of harmless error in the procedural prong of the statutes, APA statutes, why is that there and not in the substantive reversal aspect of the statute?
Your Honor, we believe it's because the General Assembly, in writing the law, wanted the courts to get the matter back before the agency to get the decision right. If there was a actual error in interpreting a statute or a regulation, and that's exactly what's happened here. If it's a procedural issue that affects an individual that is not probative and doesn't meet the standard of being a significant error, then it should actually be addressed as a harmless error. Otherwise, because there is an error, it should be remanded back to the agency to fix.
Could there be a separation of powers component to this? In other words, when something comes up, it starts in circuit court and comes up on appeal, that's one thing. If it's an executive branch agency that has delegated power from the legislature, then it's going up to a court. I'm just trying to think what the General Assembly might have been thinking. That may be different coming from an executive branch agency that's tasked with making the determination in the first instance as opposed to a court in the first instance.
Your Honor, I think that's correct, is that it's a executive branch agency delegated authority from the legislature. And because of that, it doesn't have the force and effect of law. They have some expertise, obviously, in interpreting their rules, and we'll get to that in terms of the ambiguity argument. But in this case, we believe that because there is an error of law, an error in interpreting a open heart surgery need standard in this case, that specifically looked at services, and at Sentara's suggestion became the commissioner looked at ORs. It made a significant difference, as the circuit court found, in whether or not we met the need standard.
Counsel, can you help me with the additional language in 4029, which I can't figure out what it means. The very last sentence, which directs that if there's an error of law, that it be remanded to the agency for further proceedings. And then there's a curious appendage, if any, as the court may permit or direct in accordance with law, for further proceedings, if any. Is there a read that the court dictated, or the General Assembly dictated, that there be no harmless error analysis, and then with the if any language suggested that if you do a harmless analysis, it may not be necessary? I can't figure out what that means. I'm sure it's a simple answer, but help me with that.
Your Honor, I believe that the language refers to situations where a agency makes a decision that is clearly wrong, and where the court may, in fact, set aside the decision for further proceedings, which would be if needed. And in this case, we believe that further proceedings are appropriate because there are facts that have changed since the matter was brought before the commissioner in 2017. And obviously, the standard upon which the commissioner looked at this case has changed, because the standard was that the commissioner applied was the wrong standard.
The agency makes a decision that is clearly wrong, and I'm sorry.
And under 2.2-4029, the court may take the action of suspending that decision and setting it aside, and remanding the matter for further proceedings if those proceedings are needed to resolve the issue. In this case, we believe they are.
So it's not implying that if they do a harmless error analysis, they might conclude that no further proceedings are needed?
That's correct, Your Honor. We believe that an error of law in that sentence is talking about is one in which the court has found that the decision was not in accordance with the law. And therefore, that's after the harmless error test has been applied in 4027, if appropriate, to a procedural error. But in this situation, obviously, we're not talking about a procedural error. We're talking about an error of regulatory interpretation.
Isn't it simpler than that? There can just be a legal error that's dispositive. There's nothing the agency can do. They made an error as a matter of law. They have no discretion. Game over. So you obviously wouldn't remand it in that situation.
And that may be, Your Honor, the exact reason why that language is there, is that the case is over at that point. In terms of the first assignment of error, we believe that the commissioner's consistency with the state plan is the only required consideration in the Certificate of Public Need statute. Therefore, a determination of need under that plan should be a basis for remand. And even if this court were to determine that the harmless error analysis applies to a regulatory interpretation, in this case, we believe that the error is of such import that it does affect the overall decision and requires that the commissioner get it right. That differs from the situation in the Sentara Norfolk General case in 2009, where you had an extraneous fact that the commissioner didn't actually have to determine, and that fact had no effect on the outcome. It was an error that actually benefited the applicant in that case, In this case, the error hurts us significantly. In the second assignment of error, we believe that the error is in how the lower courts applied the United States Supreme Court 2019 Kaiser v. Wilkie case to regulatory interpretation. And that Kaiser case, is, we believe, is consistent with longstanding administrative law in Virginia. But it requires that the courts actually take another step, which is to exhaust all traditional tools of construction before determining that an agency interpretation is reasonable and worthy of deference. And
isn't that traditional Virginia law? I'm struggling to see how Kaiser is that new. They're just repeating traditional views, right?
Your Honor, we believe it is in the sense, but the courts have often looked at cases.
I'm going to let you down to 4 minutes, just so you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Of ambiguity and determined that in fact the commissioner's or the agency's recommendation and interpretation is appropriate, and we believe that they ought to go a little bit further in determining actually whether the language is ambiguous. In this case, the language was not clearly ambiguous because there's an interpretation that is looking at the number of cardiac cath over time that made a determination of whether or not that was ambiguous or not. And that over time argument was something that the staff recommended in our case and did, and also was done in a subsequent case. We believe that the lower courts reflectively deferred in this case to the commissioner's erroneous interpretation. And for those reasons, the authority relies on its opening argument and reply brief, and we thank you for hearing this case today.
All right, you have 2 minutes and 42 seconds left for rebuttal.
May it please the court. I am Vanessa McLeod, counsel for the State Health Commissioner, one of the two appellees, asking this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision. There are two things that are overarching. First of all, Chesapeake's application was denied for 5 reasons, 4 of which are uncontested, and 1 of which is only partially contested. And the SMFP regulation, subsection A1, is so ambiguous that there have been 3 interpretations in the life of this case, including 2 interpretations offered by Chesapeake. As a threshold issue, the first assignment of error was not preserved. Nonetheless, the harmless error doctrine is the appropriate application under law and was properly applied in this case. Chesapeake waived the issue at the circuit court level by conceding that the harmless error doctrine applies. Any error that does not implicate the trial court's subject matter jurisdiction is subject to the harmless error analysis. It's not clear if this is an error of law. It might be procedural. Chesapeake does not specify under which provision of Section 2.24027 its assignment of error falls under. A failure to apply an SMFP provision is procedural, as alleged by Chesapeake. Then misapplication of an SMFP provision could be procedural as well. As to the second assignment of error, the Court of Appeals properly deferred to the commissioner, and there's no reason to make Virginia beholden to federal case law. Remand would be a waste of resources because even if 2 of the 3 SMFP provisions requirements were misapplied and misinterpreted, 1 requirement remains and has gone unchallenged, which alone would make the project inconsistent with the SMFP. But even if Chesapeake's application had been consistent with the SMFP, there are 4 other distinct bases for the project's denial. And consistency with the SMFP would not require the commissioner to...
They were distinct bases, but were they freestanding independent bases, which did not rely upon the aggregation of other factors in support of him?
Yes, they were distinct bases. They required a different analysis. They looked at different bits of evidence. And even if the project had been consistent with the SMFP, those four factors would have stood alone to support the denial of the application.
It could support it, but how do we know the exercise of discretion would have said it in fact did? It's a multi-factor test, and no one factor, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. is intrinsically, independently dispositive. You have to consider all the factors, right?
Correct.
One of the factors that appears to be significant is off the table. Don't you have to reconsider the factors altogether in aggregate with the one that was improperly excluded?
I don't think that the way that the SMFP is analyzed would necessarily impact the way that others were determined.
Let me state it differently. You're probably 100% right that the other factors would be sufficient under a sufficiency analysis for abuse of discretion APA review by a court. But the question is not that. The question is, could they do the opposite? Could they look at the factors and say, you know what, now that you put this first factor back on the table, I want to take another look?
Because they require distinct analysis for all of them, I don't think that the way in which the SMFP was inconsistency with the SMFP was determined would necessarily have affected the way that the other factors were considered.
The key word there is would not necessarily, but that's a sufficiency analysis. That's not a harmless error analysis. Harmless error analysis is you have the burden to say, don't worry about it. No way in the world that it affected really anything. They clearly would have done exactly the same thing, even if they had factor one in their hands, as opposed to they could blow off factor one and still reject the application. Don't you see the difference?
The evidence that's considered for the SMFP is completely separate than what would have been considered for the other factors. The analysis for the SMFP would not have infected or impacted the way that the commissioner reviewed the other seven factors.
Right. He could have still said the same thing on the other factors, but couldn't the aggregate weight be changed in the discretionary mind of a decision maker? In other words, let me give you an example. You give me three reasons to do something, right, as a judge, and they're discretionary. And I go, no, I don't really see this one. I see these other two. No, I'm not going to do it. And then I find out later, actually, I should have considered this. I was mistaken in not considering it. I still feel pretty strongly about these other two, but now I got to think about three. And now the aggregate discretion is in play. Am I misstating what I'm trying to say? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think that if all seven of them were very close in terms of the information that is looked at and the evidence that would be considered in their analysis, then it could be possible, but they're so distinct from one another that there's no, it wouldn't change the analysis for the other factors. Code sections 2.2, 4027, and 8.01, 678 are complementary harmonious statutes. 2.2, 4027 determines what can be reviewed, and once on review, the harmless error would apply. In fact, this court has previously applied the harmless error doctrine outside of the procedural context in administrative appeals.
In any case that we've done that, has there been any argument that that's a mistake and we need to look into it further?
Not to my knowledge. The analyses that I have seen are that when the error is substantial, it is remanded. But when there is an error that is not substantial, it doesn't change the outcome, then the harmless error applies. But I haven't seen one where there's a specific analysis to that end.
In the one case where we did it, wasn't that a mistake of fact as opposed to a mistake of law? There is one case where we applied harmless error analysis, but I think the issue there was a mistake of fact. Wouldn't that make a difference?
There are issues where there are mistake of fact. There was one where there was a mistake in interpretation of a potential interpretation or violation of a statute. So there are a number of them that are outside of the procedural context.
Question been asked?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Rebuttal? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jeremy Ball, and I'm here with my co-counsel, Jamie Martin, on behalf of Sentara Hospitals. To prevail in its appeal, Chesapeake has the burden of designating and demonstrating an error of law subject to review, but not any error of law will do. The error must be one of the enumerated reasons in Section 2.2-4027. Of the potential errors listed in that section, the only one relevant here is the second, compliance with statutory authority, jurisdiction limitations, or right. Importantly, the statute does not say that every misinterpretation of an agency regulation results in a violation of the agency's statutory authority. In Sentara's view, the misinterpretation of a regulation that does not result in a violation of the commissioner's statutory authority is harmless error.
But a violation of a regulation is legal error, correct?
It's in the generic sense, it's legal error, Your Honor.
But about the technical sense, you violate a regulation that's a law, that's not a legal error?
It is a legal error. It's not one of the legal errors that's defined in 2.2-4027. And the errors that are defined in that section include violation of statutory authority, jurisdiction limitations, and right. And I'm going to get to an explanation of where the court has applied that distinction. But today, the court must decide whether the concept of harmless error, partially embodied in Code Section 8.01678, which is rooted in principles of fairness and substantial justice, will carry the day, or whether Virginia administrative law will become a new domain of legal technicality, a domain in which every mistake, whether of law or fact, that does not involve required procedure will necessitate remand. In this new domain of legal technicality advocated by Chesapeake, fairness and substantial justice play no role, and the most inconsequential of errors in administrative adjudication will spawn successful judicial appeals. We disagree with Chesapeake's assertion that 8.01678 does not apply to Virginia administrative law. The operative language of that statute is, the parties have had a fair trial on the merits and substantial justice has been reached, and it originated in Section 6331 of the Code of 1919.
That statute clearly refers to trial courts and appellate courts.
It does, Your Honor, and in because it was promulgated or passed in 1919, and because portions of the statute date back to 1792, it's not surprising that the court didn't, or that the General Assembly did not refer specifically.
But when the VAPA was written, it was very clear they thought about harmless error, and they said, we'll put it in for procedural, but not for law.
They did, Your Honor. We agree with that, and we believe that the statute should be read and harmonized together. But again, that section, if you look at the statute for the VAPA, it does not say every error of law. It says errors of law that result in the agency exceeding its statutory discretion. And that's what happened in the case of State Health Commissioner versus Sentara Norfolk General Hospital. Right, that case was decided by this court in the year 2000, and the court identified two errors that the agency had made. One of those errors was an error of fact, right? Now, so the VAPA says that a finding of fact that's not supported by substantial evidence is an error of law, right? So we can call it fact. The statute calls it an error of law because it's not supported by substantial evidence. The other error in that case involved a misinterpretation of the COPN basic law. The commissioner misapplied the code provision that says that the agency can approve an application if it finds that the commissioner, or that the SMFP is outdated or inaccurate. But in that case, the commissioner found that the SMFP was inaccurate and outdated and denied the application on that basis, as one of several bases. And the court said that's a legal error. But they went on and looked at, well, what were the other reasons that the commissioner denied the application? And the court said that the other reasons were enough to demonstrate that the commissioner had not exceeded his statutory authority. So in that case, we have two examples, errors of law, neither one of them procedural. The court did not remand the case, but upheld the commissioner's determination under 2.2-4027.
Anyone make the argument that 4027 should require a remand?
I'm not aware that that argument was made, and I did not review the briefs, Your Honor. So that case by itself, if the court rules in favor of Chesapeake today, then that in essence would be overruling Sentara Norfolk General Hospital as it was decided. In the time that I have remaining, I would like to turn, well, subject to the court's questions on harmless error, I would like to turn my attention to the deference argument. So Chesapeake does not assert that the Court of Appeals misapplied Virginia law on deference. Instead, they assert, or they request, they invite this court to adopt a new standard based on federal law, based on the standard of Auer deference and Seminole Rock deference that has existed for decades. Simply put, that's unnecessary. And Chesapeake offers no compelling reason to supplant longstanding Virginia law with a federal standard of review.
How is it different? How is the standard and explanation in Kaiser different from Virginia's law?
Your Honor, we don't believe that it is. It's not different in any significant way. And in fact, Virginia courts have many times looked at Virginia regulations, applied the factors that are articulated in Kaiser, and found that the agency had misinterpreted the regulation. So Virginia courts have demonstrated that they don't act reflexively. They are not inclined to just rubber stamp agency interpretations. And so Virginia law is working, and we don't believe there's any reason to change that. We believe the Court of Appeals applied it correctly and that the commissioner's interpretation was entirely reasonable. To address Chesapeake's argument, the commissioner did not interpret the word service to mean laboratory. The commissioner interpreted the word service to mean the applicant's service, and he interpreted the word average to mean the average number of depths performed by the applicant's cardiac cath labs. A cardiac catheterization lab can have, or a service can have one lab, it can have multiple labs, and so the only way to give meaning to the word average is to look at the number performed for each laboratory within the applicant's service. That's exactly what happened here. And as my colleague mentioned, Chesapeake itself has offered multiple interpretations of what that language should mean. So it's far from clear. The Court of Appeals and the Circuit Court did not have to linger long to determine that it was ambiguous because it did not clearly state what needed to be average. But the only reasonable interpretation is the one that the commissioner adopted. I see that my time is expiring. Thank you for your attention. Appreciate it.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Good morning. I'm Steve Emmert for Chesapeake Hospital Authority. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to deliver this response. I'll just address a couple of points that Mr. Ball made. I think I can be brief in doing so. First, he raises the Sentara Norfolk General case. As Madam Justice Powell correctly pointed out, there was no issue that was decided in that case dealing with whether harmless error analysis was appropriate. There was no holding that it was. It's simply the way the parties elected to present the case. More specifically, the appellant there was complaining about a helpful error, one that helped him out, and so the court understandably just chose not to deal with that. The second is what Mr. Ball has described as the new domain of legal technicality. I had to write that down, because that's what he's inviting you to see is the parade of horribles in this case. The idea that by allowing the law to be enforced as it's written, you're inviting a domain of legal technicality. Mr. Justice McCullough correctly pointed out that this is a separation of powers issue. We don't have trials in administrative law cases. They conduct hearings, they issue case decisions. Section 678 doesn't apply to these cases. That's why, if you were to rule in favor of their position and their interpretation of these statutes, you'd be creating a legal redundancy. because the need for the phrase, except as to matters of procedure, wouldn't have any function in the statute. I know that you always strive to interpret statutes in ways that don't create those. In this case, I'll end here where Mr. Millett began. He and I are representing here the people in Chesapeake, which is more than just, actually the people in District 20, which is more than just the citizens of Chesapeake. It includes the people in North Carolina, visitors, transients coming to and from. But we're also representing administrative law. This is the way that the courts should determine these analysis go. It's the way you did decide it in Browning Ferris Industries, saying that there is no harmless error analysis for anything other than procedure.
So, Emmert, may I ask you to respond to the statement that harmless error was waived in the lower court? The doctrine was, and though you can't concede the law, you can waive an argument as to the law.
We dealt with that in our reply brief in a footnote, but the answer is that it viewed in context of Mr. Millett's response to the court, it's clear he was talking about Section 4027 and its specific provision about substantive versus procedural. That's the way we read the record, that it wasn't, when viewed entirely in context, it wasn't a statement that harmless error analysis applies. What he said is, if you do find that it's harmless error, then we understand that you wouldn't do so.
Court of Appeals did not apply procedural default on that basis.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I thank you for hearing me today. I thank you for reopening this courtroom. I've missed this.
Thank you, counsel. Please call the next case.